Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Thank you for listening to Susie Larson Live. Faith Radio podcasts are only possible because of your support. So thanks for giving, and thanks for sharing with a friend. It's only just a matter of welcome to Susie Larson Live. Always so honored to get to spend time with you. In fact, I look forward to bringing you conversations every single day that hopefully inspire you in your faith walk, that deepen your understanding of God's Word, and that heightens your awareness of His very real presence in your life. Well, a bunch of years ago, Steve Arterburn was on the show, and he said something that I'm still thinking about today. He said, "Susie, the great epidemic of the church is unresolved grief. We've all experienced many losses, but we've not slowed down long enough to face them and to heal from them." I honestly think he said that 7-8 years ago, maybe. And I would say those words are even truer today. You know, this last Saturday, I was leaving a speaking event, and I received a call about our event that's coming up this weekend. And the senior pastor's wife, the conference director, women's ministry director, mother of young children named Marie Savage, sold out follower of Christ, on Saturday morning went out for a run, was struck by a car, and died. And the town is reeling, and the church is reeling, and this ministry leader said, "We're not sure what we're going to do at the conference next weekend." I said, "I'm here to serve whatever you need. If you need to cancel, do that, whatever you need." Well, the next day, they reconnected and said, "The whole church is rallying. Church leaders from around the communities are coming forward and in droves to help out, and we feel like we need to do this conference just to honor how big God was in Marie." Would you just be praying? Would you pray for me? I want to walk into this sacred space of grief with sensitivity and wisdom. But pray for this husband, this senior pastor with young children in this community reeling from such a tragic loss. The event is sold out, but even more people keep coming, and somehow they just want to make room for them. I say that to say grief is a part of life. Maybe you're not grieving the passing of a loved one. You're grieving the loss of a dream, a job, your reputation, or relationship. You know, I think one of the most painful things to grieve is when a loved one who's still alive and well, they're supposed to love you, well, they decide they don't love you anymore. I mean, how do you go on living in your true identity and learning to receive the love God has for you when you feel such a blatant rejection? This is a sacred and important topic. Steve Carter joins me today to talk about his important book. I told him before the show, I almost forgot to look up, come up for air, and get on live with you because I was so immersed in this amazing book titled Grieve, Breathe, Receive, Finding a Faith Strong Enough to Hold Us. He knows some things about grief. He'll tell his story, and then he'll really unpack how we can grieve in a way that helps us heal. We got a handful of copies to give away today. You can text the word book. If you want in on the drawing, just text the word book to 877-933-2484. Just a couple quick announcements. First and foremost, even though I'm feeling sober today, I want to just say thank you with all my heart for your amazing generosity at our fundraiser last week. I'm blown away by you. And we in our staff meeting prayed again. God's just richest blessings upon you. Also, a couple of great welcomes. Welcomes to Billings, Montana, fairly new signal in Montana. I mean, literally, we'd only been there 2 weeks, and you should have seen the turnout from Billings, Montana, and our fundraiser. You guys are amazing. And a special welcome to Pastor Mike Novotny, who's joined our Faith Radio lineup just this week. All right, let me tell you about my guest. We'll get him on the show. Steve Carter's a pastor, speaker, author, podcast host, and the former lead teaching pastor of Willow Creek Community Church in Chicago. He hosts the Craft and Character podcast. He has a heart for the local church. He's currently a teaching pastor at Four City Church in Elgin, Illinois, and often speaks for churches, conferences, events, camps, and retreats all over the country. He lives in Chicagoland with his wife, Sarah, and their two kids. Steve, what an honor to have you on the program. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Susie. It means the world.
Yeah, looking forward to this conversation. And before we dig into your book, I would just love to know, just as you spend time with the Lord, what's He been talking to you about these days?
So Romans 6, and I actually love that this is how you start every episode, just with that question. But Romans 6, verse 8 through 11 has been just messing with me. It says this: "Now if we died with Christ, we believe that we will also live with Him. For we know that since Christ was raised from the dead, He cannot die again. death no longer has mastery over him. The death he died to sin once for all, but the life he lives to God. In the same way, count yourselves dead to sin, but alive to God in Christ Jesus. Now, I was sitting and thinking about this, and something just came to mind. And I'm sure this happens to you from time to time, Susie, like you're just reading something and it's almost as like the spirit just drops an old memory to your mind. And it was around this concept of language. There's a difference between extinct language and dead language. Now, an extinct language no longer has any first language or second language speakers, meaning if you think about a village and if some kind of tragic tragedy happened in a village and everyone was wiped out, there was nobody who could carry on that language and it would become extinct. And people who are studying this are saying that every other week in the continent of Africa, a language is becoming extinct. And there's 6,000 languages across the globe. And they're saying within the next 10 years, there's probably only 46% of those are going to exist. So you have extinct language, but then dead language is different. Dead language has no longer any first language speakers, but they do have second language speakers, meaning they're the second kind of generation is preserving it and studying it, but nobody really speaks it. For instance, like Latin or ancient Greek or biblical Hebrew or Sanskrit, it's something that people study and have preserved, but they're not necessarily speaking it. So I say all that because I was looking at how Eugene Peterson kind of writes about Romans 6, 8 through 11, and here his interpretation. Never again will death have the last word. When Jesus died, he took sin down with him, but alive, he brings God down to us. From now on, think of it this way. Sin speaks a dead language that means nothing to you. God speaks your mother tongue and you hang on every word. You are dead to sin and alive to God. That's what Jesus did. And that line, sin speaks a dead language. And when I started to think about that, there is still many of us Christ followers who are preserving and studying this language that is dead. And if sin speaks a dead language, well, that means shame speaks a dead language, and fear speaks a dead language, and bitterness speaks a dead language, and anger speaks a dead language, and greed speaks a dead language. And I just started to sit and go, wow, just like I study the text when I preach and teach and for my own kind of like soul replenishment, man, how many of us, when shame just hits us and we just, we preserve it in our heart and in our mind, wow, and it just starts to disintegrate us. And that language is dead to us. God is the one that's speaking grace and peace where we have to hang on every word. Yeah. And when we're, when we're dead to sin, we're dead to that dead language and we're alive to God. We are alive to everything that Jesus offers us. So that's what has been messing with me the last couple of days.
Somebody got to text me an amen. We're barely even started. I need to see an amen. You know, I thought it was interesting, Steve, how you pronounced disintegrate. Because that's what happens when you know what I mean? You're being moved away from being integrated. And that's what the enemy wants to do, is just to fracture us into all these pieces. And that is so powerful. If you don't mind, take us to the place in your story before the walls came crashing down. And you describe it in the book as really your dream life. You were hugely successful in your 30s, and yes, you are now. But I'm just saying, back then, for a young guy, you really were at a pinnacle of success, preaching 25,000 people on the weekends, oftentimes writing books, traveling all over the world, had a beautiful family, but your life looked perfect and you really were enjoying it because you loved God and you were blessed. So talk about what that was like for you and then how things sort of started to unravel.
Yeah, in 2011, I got a phone call from Bill Hybels, who is the founder of Willow Creek Community Church. And I had known him for about 10 years before, and he had just kind of been like a mentor from afar. He knew I wanted to be a senior pastor, and whenever I was in Michigan and he was in Michigan, he was kind enough to make time and let me ask him questions, and he'd push me and help me get better. And then in 2011, a position opened up at Willow Creek, and he called me and recruited me to leave my home state of California to come to the Midwest and join the staff at Willow Creek. And I got there in 2012, and shortly from being there, I thought I was just going to learn and teach. I was in a succession plan, and that was about 5 years. In many ways, it felt like Christian Hunger Games. It was a difficult process, a stressful process. But during that time, I just came to love the Midwest, to love the people at Willow Creek, the opportunities to teach and to talk about evangelism and discipleship. I was helping lead Bible studies for the Chicago Bears, and I could see, man, God, you have been preparing me. All the places I've been, all the mentors that I've had, all the training to be someone who would carry on the legacy of this church. And I was so excited. And honestly, I saw the next 25 years of my life being at Willow, carrying the mantle from Bill, and just beginning to teach and unleash a congregation to continue to do so much good for the kingdom of God. And then in 2018, it all came crashing down.
What was the first glimpse that things weren't as they seemed?
So I actually turned in a manuscript, and it was entitled The Best of You. And it was going to be a book that would come out when I was installed as the lead teaching pastor. There was another person who was going to be a co-lead pastor with me as well. And we were going to be announced in October of 2018. And so in January, I submitted this manuscript, and it really was based on Paul and Timothy's relationship and how Timothy was like taking the mantle, the baton from Paul. And I, in many ways, had written a treatise to Hybels to say, hey, here's what I learned from him. And he finished the race. And I got to be like a Timothy who has to take and step into this new role. And I just found such leadership and goodness through that book. And so I submit the manuscript, and then my editor calls me one day and just says, hey, do you think you should add another chapter? And I'm like, oh, what, you didn't like it? And she's like, no, I loved it, but do you think you should add another chapter? And I could tell she wanted to say something, but she just wasn't being very clear. And finally I said, what is it? And she said, Steve, there's a story that's going to come out about a Chicago mega church pastor and Me Too and abuse of power. And in my mind, I was not thinking about my mentor. I thought, oh, okay, that's interesting, but I wonder who it is. And I said, who is it? And she said, it's Bill. And I said, what? And that was like the first moment where I
found out. Wow.
How I found out. And I went to the co-lead pastor, I went to the elders, and it began to, I began to understand that many had known about some of these stories and in some ways just thought that they could manage it and that this would never come to the forefront. And then on March 23rd, 2018, a very long article written very well, telling the stories of multiple accounts of abuse of power and sexual abuse was brought forth in the Chicago Tribune, and it just floored me. It just floored me.
We got to pause here. When we come back, we'll talk about just this was kind of almost phase one in what Steve walked through, didn't see it coming, and one thing after the other, loss after loss, and what he writes in this book, Grieve, Breathe, Receive. I mean, I felt like a healing balm just reading the title. the Lord gave him those three words as he was trying to make sense of so many things that he thought were going to be one way, and they turned out to be another. And you know what? That is what grief, you know, that's why grief is necessary, because that's what life does. And I would just want to ask, friend, as you're listening today, and you think about my opening comment about what Steve Ardmore said, that the epidemic in church is unresolved grief. And it's easy if you compare your loss to someone else's worst loss for you to minimize your loss and then never heal from it. But I'll consider every text anonymous. But if you can just take a moment, tell me what you're grieving. Is there something that you still haven't grieved yet, or you're in the process of grieving? You're not on the other side of it. You can't really say, no, I mean, that was hurtful. That was painful. There's a scar, but there's no more infection. I'm healed. Is there something that still feels infected, something that's unresolved? Why don't you text me? And I just want people to know they're not alone. You can text me 877-933-2484. We'll be back in a minute. This is Suzy Larson, host of Suzy Larson Live. Maybe you have a loved one that you've been praying for years, and they still haven't trusted Jesus. Or maybe you have a loved one who once had a vibrant faith, but has since walked away. If this is true for you, know this, you're not alone. God sees you, He loves you, and He knows about the heartache you feel. And we care about it too. I've recorded 15 audio clips to encourage your soul. Text the word HEART to 877-933-2484. Thanks so much for tuning into Suzy Larson Live, having a really important conversation today about grief and how important it is to walk through this process. And what an amazing, amazing guest and book we're talking about today. The book is titled Grieve, Breathe, and Receive, and we'll unpack those three things. Steve Carter is my guest. Steve, you were next in line to step up into Bill Hybels' spot, and you taught as the teaching pastor at Willow Creek, and your life was great, and you loved Jesus, and you were thriving in ministry, and then you were suddenly blindsided by the news. And I can't imagine how disheartening it would have been, Steve, to be a man of integrity, that's something you hold so closely, to find out other people on the team knew about these allegations and were doing kind of image management, but you didn't know about them, but you were supposed to be stepping up into that role fairly soon. That must have felt like multiple levels of betrayal, I would imagine.
For sure. And I think that was one of the hardest pieces. And I think anytime someone experiences betrayal, it really messes with your trust and really messes with your discernment. And that was one of the hardest pieces, because I didn't know if my discernment got leveled or if, because of this, my discernment had now leveled up where I could start to really see. And when you don't know who you can trust, that makes really difficult to navigate through a very complex situation. And over the next few months, as more stories came out, I just found myself going a little rogue. And because I didn't know who I could trust, and I sat down with each of the women and heard their stories. And it was from their truth-telling and vulnerability that I realized, oh, this happened. Now what? Wow. And it was August 5th that a story came out in the New York Times. And, you know, Susie, you get this, but when you get on that stage to teach, people put their trust in you. And I just felt like I did not want to play with people's trust, and I didn't want to play with the hearts in a local church. And I really wanted to call out the sin that was in the house, but I wasn't able to. I was asked not to. And because of that, that put me in a really difficult spot, as if I just went along and didn't, and just kind of image managed it, I wasn't living with integrity to how I understand the goodness of repentance and forgiveness and grace and restoration. I just felt like I was just trying to manage people in the seats and budgets and not doing the actual good work that Christ implores of us for the local church. And so I ended up resigning, and it just thrust me into this space of, I thought my life was going to be one thing, and now what do I do? And that's, like you said, that's when those three words, grieve, breathe, receive, came to me, was the next morning after I resigned. And I spent the next 4.5 years trying to really answer the question, what do you do when life does what it often does, when it shocks us and punches us in the gut and we didn't see it coming? How do we pick up the pieces and move into this grief journey and do it in a way that really honors Christ and what Christ wants to do within us?
Wow. I mean, even you, first of all, it's something I wanted to say. You were so careful in the way that you told that story in the book as well. But I just want to say I'm so sorry for the way that you were treated. I'm sorry for the way you were on the receiving end of gaslighting and critique that really was actually gaslighting and manipulation. And yet, it's amazing that God in his wisdom and grace eventually showed you what was really true about you and you know, how who you are to the Lord. Around that time, I mean, we'll get to this in just a moment, friends, but you also, you lost your father, your stepdad, whom you knew as your dad, and then you had a biological dad that you thought had abandoned you, and you learned there were other truths, stories that you didn't know about that. So you were getting crashed on all sides. So this is no small season. You really were on the receiving end of one crash after the other. And I just, before we move on to the breathe, grieve, breathe, receive, you resigned out of integrity because you were like in protest to, I'm not going to manage images. I believe these women. You were kind of a lone wolf in that. And so you resigned. And yet some still even called you a coward. So you're probably grieving, at least in short term, your reputation as well. How did the Lord meet you? Talk about when he first kind of breathed these three words into your soul.
Yeah. After I resigned, I basically packed up our family and we went to Madison, Wisconsin, just to get away, because we already had like news cameras at our house in the previous weeks and months. And so I was like, we just resigned. We just need to get away. And the next morning, I just went for a walk in downtown Madison and I just was crying out to God, what do I do now? What have I just done? I just resigned. I don't know. Am I getting paid? I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, was this the right thing? And I just found myself saying, Lord, please give me a word. And I heard nothing. And I walked a few more blocks. I finally sat down outside the Capitol in Madison. And I begged God for a word. And that's when those three words just dropped into my heart. And I went to a donut shop and I just took out my journal and I just wrote, I'm going to grieve what is, grieve what I thought it was going to be, grieve how key people let me down. I'm going to breathe in new mercies. I'm going to exhale all of the anger and bitterness and frustration. And I'm going to receive what I need to learn, what, if anything, I need to own, and receive who I need to become to carry Christ's name well into the future. And it was such a gift for me because I love frameworks. It really helps me just stay on point and practice with the Lord. And I felt like God knew that in the way that he wired me. And this became just my marching orders for my healing journey was, all right, we're going to grieve. And the truth is, Susie, I knew how to achieve. I knew how to set goals. I did not know how to grieve. And that Steve Arterburn, I love that man. We've taught together a bunch, but that is a very true statement, is the epidemic in the local church is unresolved grief, because many of us haven't been taught how to properly and biblically grieve. And that's what I spent the last 4.5 years learning. And God did a profound healing work within me.
And isn't that the goal? When you're grieving, as you say, biblically, and you're keeping your heart before the Lord, there is a process of healing that takes place. And I would say, it's just my layman's perspective here, but there are times when people don't grieve properly, and thus they pick up all kinds of garbage along the way, all kinds of bitterness. And you see them 20 years later, they're still as dark and they're even more bitter and more locked in their loss and identified with their loss than anything else. And it's heart-wrenching to see that. Of course, you never want to tell someone how soon they should be over a loss. Definitely not. But there is a way to grieve in a way that brings forth health and healing and even greater wisdom. And there seems to be a way to grieve that takes you deeper into the ditch and destroys all the relationships around you. I'd love for you to make that distinction, if you would.
For sure. If you go back to the Hebrew scriptures, what we know as the Old Testament, there were three primary metaphors: Egypt, the desert, and the promised land. And 2014, I was in Israel and I saw a rabbi, and I just love just going to connect and talk with new people. And so I walked into this rabbi and I said, "Hey, in the Hebrew scriptures, you have Egypt, the desert, the promised land. This is a random question, but how much time do you think on average most people spend in those three places?" And he laughed at me and he said, "You Americans are so funny. You think everything is up and to the right, but not for us. We think 10 to 15% of your life is in Egypt. 10 to 15% of your life is in the promised land. And the remaining 70 to 80% is in the desert."
Wow.
And I think for many of us, we have worked really hard to bypass the desert. And if you think about the Hebrew nation, they were probably a month's journey from the promised land after they crossed the Red Sea, but it took them almost 500 months before they actually got into the promised land. And they just wandered in circles. And I think that for many of us, to your point, when we are in that desert season, or what I believe is that silent Saturday and Holy Weekend, when we find ourselves in that space, it really forces us to ask ourselves, what is our relationship with waiting? Because for many of us, we hate the wait. We just want to get to the promised land, or we just want to get to Sunday as fast as possible. Some of us, we waste the wait. We just choose unhealthy escapes. And what that does is it just slows us down. We have to keep wandering. We have to not just heal from the pain that happened. We got to now actually start to heal from the addictions or the places we chose to run to or the bitterness. And you can either hate the wait, waste the wait, or you could learn to win the wait. And when you do that, you allow God to go after your heart. Because as one scholar says, it's one thing to leave Egypt. It's another thing to have Egypt leave you. And when we have to do the work of saying that betrayal hurt, or that trauma stung, that abuse wasn't right, that was unjust, that wasn't fair, we have to do the work. And this really becomes a season that shapes our hearts, our minds, our bodies, and souls to actually be ready to receive the surprise that God has for us. And that can be healing, that can be grace, that can be breakthrough, that can be freedom. But if we don't do the work, we make it a lot difficult for us to be aware of the gift that God has for us on the other side.
Before we go to break, I want to read this excerpt from Grieve, Breathe, Receive. We can distract ourselves from grief by increasing our life's volume, staying busy, professionally challenged, or keeping our social calendars or credit cards maxed out. Or we can try befriending our grief. We can get curious and courageous, letting go of the tricks that keep us running from sadness, and instead make room for what it may want to show us about ourselves and the world. Some of you maybe have been staying busy and running from sadness, but don't be afraid. If you slow down and invite Jesus into that space, you'd be amazed at what he unearths, you know, what he transplants, how he puts truth where you've believed a lie. He wants to heal you. He wants to heal you. Talking to author and pastor Steve Carter. When we come back, Steve, let's slow down through the grieve, breathe, receive process and tell us just some tangibles on how you grieved, what that actually looked like on a practical level. Then how did you learn to breathe? And then what happened when you learned to receive? Steve Carter's my guest today. Again, the book is Grieve, Breathe, Receive. I think it's such an important topic. And as I asked friends to share, this dear friend said, a friend of 20 years decided just to stop communicating and to end the friendship. And this dear one said, talks about when she and her hubby married, the age differences were not really noticeable, but now that they've aged, the reality is so much more apparent and impactful of their daily lives. And she misses what used to be. Others are talking about spiritual abuse from a very young age, grieving the loss of health, grieving the loss of stability, loss of siblings, so many losses, friends. We see you. We love you. We'll be back in a minute. Pray you're having a really great day. Thanks for tuning into Suzy Larson Live. We're talking about an important topic. It's a hard topic, but it's so important. We're not going to shy away from it. It's grief. And I really have learned in my years walking with the Lord and just sorting through my own losses, hurts, and heartbreaks, that if you compare your loss to someone else, especially if their loss is just more obvious, more weighty, and you minimize your loss, what you're doing is shoving it down into the basement of your soul, not dealing with it, and it'll come out somehow. It'll come out some way. It'll impact how you show up in life, how you treat yourself, how you see others. And so this is why it's so important to grieve our losses. And pastor, author Steve Carter joins me today. His book is just stunning. I mean, truly, I could almost not put it down. I looked up and saw the clock and had to whip into my studio here. Grieve, Breathe, Receive is the title. Finding a faith strong enough to hold us. Got a few copies to give away. You can text the word book to get in on the drawing, 877-933-2484. And we haven't even touched on the other losses, and maybe we can here in just a moment. But suffice to say, Steve, you walked through a season that was profound, and the Lord breathed these three words into your heart to help you heal. Grieve, breathe, receive. So you said grieve what is, grieve what you thought it would be, and grieve how you were let down. So how do you do that? Did you pull out a journal? Did you go to therapy? Did you do all of that and other things too? What's a practical way to grieve what you thought it would be?
Yes, I began with looking at those three words, and then I found something in Holy Weekend, something around Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And I saw on Good Friday, there was something that was unfair, unjust, not right. And I found myself just on a desert trail in Arizona, just walking, and I just stopped. And I began to see, oh, if I cannot name what happened, if I cannot just name the grief. And here's the truth, Suzy. I found so many people asking me, how can you still love the church? Like after all that you went through. And I just was really, really honest. Willow didn't hurt me. Five people did. The church did not hurt me. Five people did. And my job was to name the five people. And I had to name, like you said, the grief that I lost my stepfather almost 7 months after I lost my spiritual father and the role that he had in my life and that role at the church. And there was just this disintegration in many ways. It was happening within me. And I had to just stop and go slow. My counselor would tell me, Steve, slow is smooth and smooth is fast. And you have to go the slower way through it. You can't rush through it. You are in Friday. You are in grief. So let's do the beautiful work of just naming it. And that's what I began to do.
How did God meet you there? Like, what were other things he said to you? And I mean, and did anybody from inside the camp understand why you needed to leave? Did you maintain any friendships from inside the camp where they understood really what you did was the brave thing?
I would say that what ended up happening is because we live so close to Willow, I felt as if the Lord said, go to the desert and wait for instructions. And I thought it was metaphorical because I'm an achiever. And it wasn't. Yeah. I told my wife the next morning and she just teared up, and she's from Arizona. And she just said, I've been sensing the same thing. I want to go home. And so as Eugene Peterson says, all geography or all theology is shaped and rooted in geography. And so I started to read the desert mothers and desert fathers. I started to just understand that there was something about the desert. And really, it's the deserted place. It's the forsaken place. And I know the verses, God is with me. The steadfast love never ceases. It never comes to an end. Like, I know those verses. And they're these simple truths. But then they find themselves going through a moment of struggle, and you have to go, do those verses still hold up? And what I came to discover in the desert is that they do. And that now simple phrase, God is with me, or God will never leave me nor forsake me, it just became not a simple truth, but a sacred truth, because I now understand a much weightier understanding of that phrase, God is with me. And so I would say that was one of the surprises for me in my time in the desert. I would also say, back to your other question, you know, early on, I think people felt like I had abandoned them. I had left. I think some people just thought I was just choosing to protect me and that I didn't care about the congregation. But there was so much that they didn't know behind the scenes that I had been trying to do. But as time has gone on, I have received a number of people who have stopped me and said, I'm sorry, who've called me and just said, hey, I really sent you some really painful texts and messages. I just was sad. I was sad that the church that I grew up in, the church that I loved, was imploding. And I didn't know. And what I realized was, because I was a pastor, I was accessible to that congregation. People had access to me and they knew I would respond when they didn't have access to a lot of the other people. And so I got a lot of the energy that probably wasn't really for me, but I was someone that was safe enough that they could lash out at and wouldn't react. But I did. I mean, it messed with me. I mean, I didn't lash out to them, but I didn't want people to come. But I
understand. Well, you're garbling really bad. Did the mic move at all by any chance?
Is that better?
That's better. Thank you. Okay, I don't want to miss what you're saying. Yeah.
No, I just had to really help them see that as a pastor, character and integrity is everything. I did not want to play with people's trust. And once they started to see that and saw I didn't give up on the church, I kept teaching, I kept serving, I kept pastoring. I think over time, people began to realize, oh, we had the wrong idea about Carter.
Right. Wow. And I'm thinking in a practical way with grief, you know, when you talk about making space for it, maybe as God shows you, friend listening today, what you're grieving, I think the temptation, as you talk about, is to outrun sadness in a way. What if you slowed down and thought, what are my coping mechanisms? What do I do? What am I trying really hard not to feel? And where do I go for that to happen? Do I drink a lot? Do I shop and spend a lot? You know, do I overcommit and stay busy? What if I didn't do those things? And what if I said, God, instead of, you know, trying to make something new happen on my own, I asked you to do a new thing in me? I mean, that's a really practical place to start, isn't it?
It really is. For me, that became so important to the healing journey because, you know, if you think about Holy Weekend, you have Good Friday, which is that grief. You're in grief. This shouldn't have happened to Jesus. And then you have, if you put yourself in the disciples' shoes, they wake up the next morning and they're like, are we going to get arrested? What's going to happen to us? They have no concept that Jesus is going to go through a resurrection. They just think to themselves, what is going to happen now? And I think for many of us, it's in that season right after the pain that we just try to do whatever we can to get through it. And we do whatever it takes to minimize often the grief or just run to some coping device, like you said. And I just had to write down, what are my unhealthy escapes going to be? And what will my healthy escapes be? Because if you don't, the enemy's going to try to steal, kill, and destroy any opportunity for you to heal and experience breakthrough. It's going to try to hold you back. It's going to try and steal your joy. It's going to try and keep you stuck. And so I just had to list that. And some temptations that I actually thought I had beaten decades ago, I realized once I removed the structure and my job and my position, oh man, they were right there. They were right there. And it just required, again, just a seeing it, being aware of it, bringing it before friends and mentors, but also just bringing it before the Lord and just saying, hey, help me, father me through this.
Boy, so good. A couple minutes before our final break, say a word about how you learn to breathe. Breathe in His goodness, His peace, His mercy. Exhale resentment, anger, bitterness, and that's not a one-time affair. That is, you know, we have to keep showing up. We have to keep breathing. So say a word if you would.
Well, for me, I realized one of the greatest gifts that Jesus gave us was forgiveness. That is central to what the gospel is all about, that we have been forgiven. And when Jesus returns in John 20, you know, he kind of appears and the disciples are just hiding out. And he says to them twice, peace be with you, peace be with you. He breathes on them, tells them to receive the Spirit. And then he says the most common sense line. He says, if you forgive anyone, they will be forgiven. And if you don't, they won't. And I just realized that I had a lot of unforgiveness in my heart. And that breathing in and breathing out was a reminder, oh, those new mercies in Lamentations 3 that are new for me, they also have to be new for the people that I'm really frustrated with. Mm-hmm. And forgiveness is a solo sport. This is just between me and God. Reconciliation is a team sport. And I have to prepare my heart. And if I don't actually practice forgiveness and I let unforgiveness stay, that is going to be a seed that becomes bitterness, resentment, rage, anger, brawling, gossip, slander, all of that. And what the Lord taught me through the two Greek words of forgiveness was a little breath prayer that really helps me, that whenever the five names came to mind, sometimes just going online or a flashback or a moment of sadness, I just would carry this small little brown cross in my pocket. I would grab that cross and I just would think to myself, cross, release, send it away, because it was the cross that saved me. And I'm going to release this person and I'm going to send it away. I'm not going to let it land in my heart. I'm just going to practice it. And to be honest, Susie, like I would say there were days where a couple of those names, I had to pray cross, release, send it away 70, 80, 90 times, just because I did not want unforgiveness to live within my body. I wanted to be a person of forgiveness, because if you did that, let's say that fast forward, the other people had done their work and they show up and they want to own what they've done and I'm actually ready, then reconciliation can happen. But if I don't do my work and they do theirs, I'm not going to actually welcome the potential for reconciliation. And so that's what God began to teach me in the breathe section.
So good. We're going to pause here. When we come back, we'll talk about the receive section. And Steve, I'd love to know on the other side of the break, when life started to spring up within you again, when the winds of change started to blow, where you thought, I'm entering a new season, I'm actually healing. God's not done with me yet. I would love to know just how that all happened for you. Friends, this is worth your time and your space, just to make space to grieve your losses and to have God meet you there. There's a healthy biblical way to do that. Steve Carter's written about it in Grieve, Breathe, Receive. I'll be back in a minute. Hi, I'm Susie Larson, host of Susie Larson Live. I remember one day after my show, driving home from the station, when my heart was very heavy. I was burdened with something that I really couldn't talk about, but God knew about. I was crying out to Him for wisdom, insight, direction, something. Give me something, God, I cried. Suddenly, my ears perked to the voice on my radio, and it was someone on Faith Radio talking about the very problem that I had. I work for Faith Radio, yet at that moment, I was a recipient of a divine connection of hearing the right word at the right time. That's what God does. We love Him for it. Every day, we do our best to serve up the best leaders, the best voices of our day to help disciple you in your faith. But then God does what only He can do. He steps in and helps you to hear the right word at the right time. If Faith Radio has become a part of your daily journey with God, we would love to hear your story. Share how God is using Faith Radio to encourage you and to help you grow at myfaithradio.com. Thanks so much for tuning in to Susie Larson Live, talking to author Pastor Steve Carter about his book, Grieve, Breathe, Receive. And as we've been saying throughout this whole hour, everybody's got things to grieve. We all have losses and hurts and disappointments. And I think it's just wise to know that you've got a loving Father. He's a comforter, and he saves those who are crushed in spirit. And he wants you to make some space, make a little bit of space there so that you can sit with those losses, not to sulk in them, not to go into the ditch of self-pity. In fact, I would submit you're more prone to do that if you don't deal with them, if you don't feel them to get them healed. And as Steve was walking through, we just touched on a portion of his story, but his just world sort of fell apart around him with multiple losses. The Lord breathed these three words into his spirit just as a way to process and heal. Grieve, breathe, and receive. Grieve what is, grieve what you thought would be, and how you were let down. Breathe in goodness, peace, and mercy, and exhale bitterness, resentment, and anger. And as Steve said, sometimes you might have to do that 100 times a day. Now finally, receive. Receive what you need to learn, what you need to own, who you'll become. I told you I wanted to ask you about when healing started to happen, but when you look at like what you need to own, when you look back, like in the story, I thought it was interesting because you honored Bill Ibles as your mentor, but then looking back, you're remembering times that he really diminished you and demeaned you, but you sort of took it as tough correction. So is there anything in hindsight that you think, I wish I would have processed that differently? I mean, I'm just curious.
I think so. I mean, I remember a talk that Christine Kane did once, and she was saying from Genesis 3, the questions that God asks, you know, where are you? Who told you that? And I just remembered that one. Did God really say this? And I found myself really thinking and holding on to some truths that Bill said were truths about me. Mm. I wasn't a leader. I couldn't lead myself out of a paper bag. That's what he said to me once. You know, I believed him because he was a leader. He had built Willow. He was leading the Global Leadership Summit, all of that. And I just realized that I had given him a little too much power to shape my identity. And that was something I had to own. And I had to really sit with, did God really say that? Like, who told you that? Oh, that was Bill. That wasn't God. And there was moments along those lines around identity. But I also, Susie, had some unforgiveness towards myself. And, you know, I really wanted the truth to come out. I really wanted people to understand why I did what I did. And I had been approached by a publisher to just write out my story. And they really saw it as a chance to kind of get that story out into the world. And I did not go through with it, but I did entertain that. And I entertained a level of vengeance. And I ended up having to buy myself out of that contract. And the Lord taught me a lesson. You know, if you entertain revenge, it's going to cost you, and it cost me. And so I had to own that. And that was part of my healing, as I couldn't minimize that. I had to own those parts in me. But I would say when it comes to the gift of receiving, again, if you kind of ground, grieve, breathe, receive in Holy Weekend, Good Friday, Silent Saturday, the breathe, and then receiving being Easter Sunday, nobody thought that Jesus was going to rise from the dead. And when that happened, everyone was surprised. And that's when I began to recognize is the receive section really is about how God will surprise you. I can't tell you when your grief will enter into kind of that Sunday moment. All I can tell you is that Sunday is coming. You flip through the scriptures and you will see Romans 8:28. God works all things for the good of those who believe. Like, God is working, even when we don't see it, even when we don't feel it, God is working, because the truth of Holy Weekend is Sunday is coming. And Sunday changes everything. And we have to be the kind of people who can grieve with hope. And that's what I had to learn. And that's has now shaped me to be able to hold the full spectrum of sadness and shock, but also on the other side, hold hope and surprise. And that's what Christ continues to do in me.
Wow, Steve, thank you for your courage, really, in writing this book and in sharing this important message. And I'm praying, friends, we can all just create some space in our lives to sit with God and let Him minister to those places and spaces, because we all have them. Steve, I pray God just continues to heal you and use you and to help others heal as well. And we look forward to having you back. Looking forward to future conversations with you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Steve Carter is my guest. Again, the title of his book is Grieve, Breathe, Receive. Don't you just love that? You can text the word book if you want in on the drawing, 877-933-2484. I pray you found some encouragement here today. We're on this journey together. We can do this, friend. We'll meet you back here next time. Thank you for listening to this conversation from Suzy Larson Live. These conversations are available because of your support. You could become a supporter now at myfaithradio.com. Please subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss any episodes, and then share it with friends so together we can all have a deeper life in Christ.